You're listening to Ecto Portal, a journey into the unknown with Anthony Anderson and Verna Wilson.
I hope that you are seated comfortably with the light turned down and the curtains drawn.
Once again, to another journey into the unexplored, the unexplained Ecto Portal. I'm Anthony Anderson, your host, and I'm here with my co-host,
Verna Wilson.
And today we have another local story, another cursed location, the infamous Fox Plaza. Now, there is a Fox Plaza in Los Angeles, just not to be confused with the Fox Plaza in San Francisco. And that has a history, curses, all kinds of devilishly unfortunate events that surround the building, and we'll talk about that when we do the show. So what did you do this week, Verna?
Oh, well, we didn't really do much. We went to the Arinda Theater for this festival that they had, where they had a bunch of horror B-movies from the 1950s and 60s. Mm-hmm. And they had a bunch of commercials and movie ads from the 50s and 60s, including films that they used to show to school kids, you know, to instruct them on stuff.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Instructional learning films.
Oh, those were funny. I remember those. God, do I remember those. Those were so funny, especially the ones about marijuana back in the...
yeah.
I remember the one where there was a bunch of teenagers in the car and they were all clapping, "Make marijuana legal." This was in the 60s. We saw that in school. And isn't it funny, but now it's legal in a lot of states, so I guess their dream came true.
Well, sort of legal.
Sort of legal, yeah. It's illegal in a lot of places now. But anyway, we didn't get to the whole festival because we had some family, because my boyfriend had some family stuff to take care of. So we actually ended up coming to the last part of it, and we saw The Blob. With Steve McQueen on the screen. It's so different watching it on the screen than it is actually
on TV.
Yeah, and I was thinking, gosh, I saw The Blob on TV maybe a few times, but I never watched the whole thing. I would just see it and I would just kind of roll my eyes, thinking, oh, they're all scared of this thing that's floating, you know, to come get them. So I just used to laugh at it and never really watch it. Mm-hmm. So watching the whole thing on the screen made me realize this is really a good movie. Steve McQueen's a good actor. I mean, it was really well done, actually.
It's pretty good. I like the remake from the mid-80s, too.
I never saw that one.
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a little more gory, obviously, because it's later in time, but it's just as good, I think. It's just different. They kind of do their own thing with it. They take the premise.
Yeah, so... So anyway, it was really good. We really enjoyed it, and so we had a lot of fun. And then we were going for ice cream afterwards. And one of the things I wanted to mention about this incident that happened, we went to go see the movie, was when we were walking on the way to the theater. There's a shopping plaza, and there's a vintage toy train that that says Santa Fe Express, where you put coins in there and the kid rides on it. You know, those mechanical
department stores and supermarkets. Yeah,
yeah, the mechanical. So for some reason, my boyfriend was telling me. He said, "Let me take a picture of you next to the train." I said, "Okay, I've never I wasn't expecting to take a picture.
Why? Okay.
No, I didn't. I wasn't really saying why. I just thought, oh yeah, that would be cute, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I took the picture, and it was a fun picture. It was a cute picture. So after the theater, we were walking back because there's an ice cream store not so far, and we walked past the train, and then all of a sudden we heard a toot, like a whistle, and we stopped, and Greg's and my boyfriend said, "Wait a minute, that train just whistled." And he said, "Did you hear that?" I said, "I heard it. You know, like the train, they go choo-choo, mm-hmm. the whistle sound." And he said, "And right when we walked past it." And it was so loud. I mean, you couldn't have missed it. And
there wasn't anything else on the street, a car?
No,
Nothing like that?
No, because the plaza, the shopping center was closing.
Oh.
And all the shops were closed by then.
So there's no
it was after 10 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was after 9 o'clock, actually.
Gotcha.
Going towards 10, and the shops aren't open. So we were looking around, and I said, does this thing do that? And he said, no. He said, I must have walked past it a million times and never seen anything, never heard anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like one of those vintage trains where you just put the coin in and it go, and you know, it goes back and forth.
Hydraulically moves.
Yeah, but it's not sophisticated enough to do the little train noises. So we don't know why we heard that, but
it's a haunted train ride, folks.
Exactly. Arinda. It was a haunted something, so we were still a little weirded out by it. We went to get an ice cream. We still talked about it, and he lives in the area, so he's seen that train for years. He's never heard that.
Verna's going to do an in-depth 3-hour investigation of this ride.
Of a toy train. Yeah, sure. But anyway, it was weird. We don't know why it happened, but that's what happened.
That is bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely ask the store owner if it ever had a sound. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they know that if it did or didn't, or if it's never had a sound, that's even weirder.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it did have a sound, it's still weird. It's just, why after all these years did it just decide to happen? Was there no wind? No wind going on?
Nothing.
Yeah,
no.
See, that's weird. I would
and,
ask,
and to make it sound like a real train whistle? I mean,
yeah.
I don't...
I would ask, though, just out of curiosity.
We might. I mean, you know, next time we're walking by there, we might, if the store is open. Yeah. So,
that's
we'll
bizarre.
See what happens. Yeah. So, what's with you?
Not a lot of exciting things. Just working on my book still. I'm about halfway right now. And along the way, I gather stuff for a second book. But the first book, which is about San Francisco, I'm about halfway through. So, I'm like... Every time I go somewhere, including on the way here today,
mm-hmm.
I had to take pictures of certain locations that are going to be in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like today's show is actually going to be in my book, so I've already taken pictures and photographs of that. So I had to take pictures on the way here of another location for another part coming up that I'm writing in the book too. So I like to have as many current photos
mm-hmm.
as I can
just
to show people a representation of what it looks like
now. Of course, that's a great idea.
And sometimes I can put pictures where you can comparatively see, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago and now. So, it's not exciting, but it's a lot of little things you have to worry about.
It's what makes a good piece of work, a good research and good work. And also, you have to realize that the people who are going to be reading that book have probably never been to the area, so they're going to be walking past those places. So it's good to see what the place looks like now.
Yeah, and I've found in doing research for a book, it's interesting because you're going to find a lot of other like paranormal books that have been written over the last 60, 70 years, and they go a few different decades. And some of them will include the stories from the previous person's book that was published years before theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And some people drop certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Some people add their own stories, and they drop older ones, or they cut down the stories of the older original story. I have gone back, and I'm like taking the full version of every story, and then updating, adding stuff that I have onto the end of
mm-hmm.
it, if I have it.
Sure.
But I'm trying to bring it full circle and include all the details of all the stories, and not just a little blurb. Because I think if you're going to focus on a story and include it in a book, you really should do the research and include the whole history. So
I agree. I completely agree.
It just takes a long time. Because I find one thing and I go down a rabbit hole and I find out a whole bunch more stuff I never knew. So this happens.
Well, that's actually the beauty of writing that, of what you're writing. Because sometimes I'll read a book on the history of a place, and mm-hmm. I'll think, oh, I've read that before, yes. Or yes, I know all about that. And, you know, and it's not that it's not well written, it is, but yeah. they don't include anything new. So the fact that you're including extra things about the place that we didn't yeah. know about really yeah. shows some good work there.
Well, in some cases, like your story, or when we were investigating a different place, I will include those things, like results we had,
our findings, right.
our evidence, yeah. photographs.
Right.
Because sometimes you can't get access again. People aren't, they flip them, someone buys it out, nobody's allowed in again. We could be the last ones for some of these places that get a chance to do this, so.
Right, or sometimes, believe it or not, the people who run the place or who knows about the place will see something's written about it,
yeah.
and they'll think, oh, we're not giving access to that anymore, and they'll access a certain area, they'll block a certain area, or they'll just have no access. Yeah, which is kind of sad, because
during COVID, there's a lot of places, a lot of hotels and stuff that went out of business, restaurants that I knew that were old and had stories, and I did my best to reach out and contact these, because usually they're held by realtor
right.
holding companies.
Yeah,
the original owner already got out. They want to sell it, put it
right.
on the market. But it's COVID, so nobody's buying and nobody's doing anything.
Yeah.
So, like the, what's it called?
Sir Francis Drake.
Francis Drake. Remember, that was
We were talking about that one a while back.
Over and over, I tried to get in there during COVID, and I just never got a response. And now it's opened as a different hotel name. It's a different company. They've kind of whitewashed all the Sir Francis Drake history and turned it into something else.
Which is really sad.
It is sad. But I may include that in my book, because there is stories connected to the hotel.
And there's also the Palace Hotel. And that one hasn't changed their name, or they still have all the historical items, and they're open.
Well, I know, but it was two hotels. The original hotel was mostly demolished. There was stuff they saved, like the garden
room.
Yeah,
they did. Yeah.
And then they built a new hotel around it, sort
of. Right.
Yeah, so they're both old enough. They both have histories and incidents. So yeah, that would definitely be one. There's so many places in this city that, man, my book would be 2,000 pages if I waited and included everything.
And the good part about COVID being over is that a lot of buildings and places are opening up again.
Yeah.
So I know you and I thought of a few places. So if there's a few places we were planning to go back, maybe we're able to do it now.
Maybe. If they'll let us in.
If they'll let us in.
I found it with San Francisco, it isn't just, hey, can I get in and investigate?
Right.
You got to engage them, interest them.
Right.
Because if they're not interested, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's a little bit of curiosity and interest, and I found out you can't just ask once. You literally have to dog it and keep asking until they just say yes.
Yes.
Just to say, okay, they really want to do this. Let's just let them do this and get over with. Or they're curious and they want to do it. So,
right.
It's a little more work in San Francisco. People aren't so quick to open their doors and let you investigate.
Right.
But yeah, so that's what I've been working on lately. But it's, you know, like I said, it's fun. I learn new stuff, possible new show topics. You never know.
Yes.
So it's good.
Yeah.
All right. So let's do the paranormal news. Welcome to the paranormal news. This week, I got one of a traditional type. I don't know if I 900% believe this particular incident or article, but you know what? What the heck? A doorbell camera was recently captured. Two men in black visiting somebody's home. They weren't actually there, but if you noted most doorbell cameras, they're connected to people's smartphones. Even if they're at work, they can see who's knocking at their door. They just click the icon and it shows them all their cameras in their house. Well, this was two guys in suits wearing dark sunglasses, and they're ringing the doorbell. They're knocking on the door. And the one guy's standing kind of in the back by the porch, and another guy's standing in the foreground. And between them is this weird object that's sort of floating in the air behind them, like in the sky. And people are like, oh, is that a UFO? Are these men in black? Now, they each had briefcases, so I haven't seen a Men in Black pictures or anything where they're carrying briefcases, but I guess there must be some. But they just kept One guy kept knocking on the door, and people say it's a UFO, like I said, floating between them. You'll be able to see it. There's a video clip, and I'll post it to our Ecto Portal page, and you can actually see it. I don't entirely buy that. I guess a woman's children texted her kids, said, "Do you know who these people are?" And they didn't know. And they linger and linger, and then they eventually just take off. But I don't know. People just think it's weird because there's a UFO in the background. But usually men in black show up after a UFO sighting in the area, or if someone has an experience or connection or sees something, then the men in black show up. But the men in black show up and the UFO is in the same shot? That's a little weird.
I've never heard it that way either. But, you know, what I wonder, I have my own Men in Black story, by the way. But
let me finish this.
Yeah, I know, no. I'm not going to tell it right away.
She already told us that story.
I told that story a long time ago. I'm not going to talk about it again.
But this was in California. This woman lives in California.
It's interesting there's in California. But it's interesting how they always look the same.
Well, these guys, that's what I wanted to say. These guys don't look anything alike, really. One shorter than the other. They don't act like Men in Black. They don't have that rigid sameness
about
them.
And in my story, they didn't look... They looked almost the stereotype, but not quite. But But it's interesting. California...
I just think they wanted to give them the...
Does it say what part of California it happened?
No, it didn't say.
People, they probably want their privacy, whoever it happened to.
I think they just wanted to give somebody the watchtower.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I think they were probably a religious organization that was going door to door. That's what I think.
So they look pale and...
Well, no, you can't even tell that on the doorbell camera. It's just...
Well, no, I've never seen...
But they talk to each other, which I know when people talk about Men in Black, they're not always talking to each other.
Oh, that's interesting.
These two actually have a few words to each other, and it didn't sound like English.
Yeah.
But you couldn't really tell what nationality they were. They both wore the sunglasses. The suits didn't look completely identical. So, you know, they always say Men in Black are always dressed like suits from almost like another time, like the 40s
or
50s.
Yeah, they're a little outdated. I've heard that too,
But not enough to really stand up, but enough to go, why are they dressed so weirdly?
And they always look paler than normal.
Yeah.
I've never heard of somebody talking about Men in Black looking healthy and vibrant.
Yeah. Energetic is not a word you would usually hear. But aggressive. You've heard of Men in Black being aggressive with people.
I've heard of them being pushy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just watch the video and you'll see.
Now, what would be your theory of why they would show up and what would they be pushy about?
Well, you said usually Men in Black show up after someone has had a sighting or an experience with a UFO.
And what good's that going to do? Why?
We'll show up to find out, what do you know? What did you see? Don't tell anyone what you saw. The people have been aggressively threatened after. People show up at the door and they do that. That's what the Men in Black do.
Okay.
The Men in Black are basically the cleanup guys.
Because it's funny, though, because if you act that way, people aren't going to tell you what they saw, or they're not going to be, or they're just going to avoid you.
Well, if they lie and say they're from the government, they're going to do something to you, or they're going to make sure you suffer if you don't tell them.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
People get like, they don't know what to do. They just tell them what they saw. And they say, don't ever tell anybody ever again. Don't ever mention it again. Don't ever tell anybody you saw anything. That happens. Sometimes people disappear. You'll read about articles about people disappearing.
That's true. Yeah.
So I don't know. I watched it. I'm not convinced it's Men in Black. They just don't, they seem too individual to me.
Well, you know, they could have different types of groups of Men in Black, not necessarily the same one, and they all operate differently. I don't know. We don't know. But it's kind of weird that it happened right after.
Yeah. So, take a look at that video. It's interesting. So what have you got?
Well, I have one about a couple of people who are investigators, and they're a couple, and they're fighting over prized possessions that they've collected, including a human skeleton, because they're divorcing. They're either divorcing or breaking up.
So they just collect stuff?
They just collect stuff, right. And this article was from this is an article from The Sun.
So it's not a business or anything, they just like to collect paranormal stuff?
Well, I guess they made it as part of their business. There are a couple of investigators, and they're locked in a custody battle over their possessions. And one of them is named Lee Steer. He's 37. He walked out on his wife, Lindsay, who's 53, after they spent 7 years touring Britain's most haunted sites. So they won millions of online followers. They wrote books. They collected possessed items from all over the world. And after their marriage broke down they're fighting over items which include dolls, paintings, and a human skeleton. And their pieces actually were on display at their museum in Rotherham, South Yorks, which has since shut down. The museum shut down since then. So Lee has taken the three haunted dolls, Annabelle, Elizabeth, and Scarlet, and he forced Lindsay to get the locks changed. And Lindsay said, "These things in there may not be worth money, but they're very precious to me." She said, "We got things from all over the world, things that people send us, whether it's a tiny stone or a huge item. I really cherish everything." And they met in late 2016, and they ran Project Revealed, Ghosts of Britain. And they have over more than 2 million followers on Facebook. So if you want to look them up on Facebook, that's where they are. And since they've split up, Lindsay has accused Lee of ghosting her. And she said, "I've tried..."
No pun intended.
No pun intended, right. She said, "I've tried many times to have a conversation with him, but he ignores my texts. I sent him messages on messengers. He blocked me. I had no communication. It's like he wrote me off altogether." She said, "I wasn't the reason my marriage broke down. It was a shock when he walked out on me with no explanation." So Lee, who's been ghost hunting for 25 years, said, "We split up and all my ghost hunting equipment was taken from me. I thought if I couldn't access the equipment, I wanted to take the dolls. I wanted what's mine." So it's very sad that a marriage breakup is causing a lot of problems that could have been avoided. So she said, "Hopefully things will work out in the future in terms of who has what. They're priceless items to me." So it sounds like they're just...
Well, it's not to be confused. Now I'm glad you actually gave all the facts, because I kept thinking it was the married couple that has the traveling haunted object museum in the U.S. Different
oh, no,
couple.
No.
Entirely different couple. So
but I don't know. I don't even know about that couple. That's interesting.
Yeah, we were going to do a show at one point.
Oh, right,
they travel,
okay.
They go to conferences and they bring
Museum. You talked about them, yeah.
So I'm glad it's not them. Then. So that's interesting. I don't even know how a court would decide who gets what. I guess it would be monetary. Like, you keep everything. You figure out half of what it's all worth financially. Split that in half. That's what you have to pay her.
Yeah.
If you want to keep everything. Otherwise, you guys got to sit here and divvy this up.
That sounds like the reasonable thing to do to me. I mean...
Yeah. You give me the monetary compensation for half, or we split it up.
And I do realize that paranormal equipment is very expensive.
Yeah.
But... You know, maybe split the equipment, split the items.
Yeah, that's all you could do is split it, or financially find out its actual worth and just have one person keep it and pay the other person.
So the human skeleton, that...
We have strict laws in the U.S. I don't know what their
laws
are.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a little... That's...
Here, I guess they call it grandfathered, where... The skeleton's so old, they don't really know who it is, and they allow them. But you can't obtain a new skeleton, human skeleton,
no.
From anybody. It's illegal.
Yeah, I was a little surprised when I read that. I thought, how do they manage that?
Well, in England, there's probably a better chance of getting a human skeleton than in the U.S.
You've got to admit,
it's a lot older.
Yeah.
I don't know where you would go. Where would you go?
Where would you go?
A graveyard, I guess.
And
that's
why
probably
would you,
what...
And why would you keep it is what I wonder.
Well, if they went to a graveyard, I'm sure that's what they want to avoid. There's people digging up graves to get skeletons.
Yes, exactly. So,
ugh.
So anyway, it sounds like a mess. And
yeah.
I
don't know how that's going to turn out. Maybe we'll find out later.
I actually thought about bringing one of them on the show, because I'm sure they have a lot of interesting stories.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know how much they'd want to talk about.
Yeah.
Beyond, you know, about the split and all that stuff.
Well, maybe we won't bring that up, but we could always bring up the museum, their items, what the, some of the investigations they did.
Maybe one of those with such a bitter memory now, they may not want to talk about any of it.
Yeah, that's true.
You never know. You never,
well,
have to,
you know what?
You'd have to contact them and kind of just feel them out a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Maybe look up their Facebook page and see what their posts say and take it from there. Yeah.
Yep. Sounds good. All right. That's the paranormal news, folks.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're acting like a child.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
All right, today's show is another local story, like I mentioned before. We both know generalized things about this story, I think. In the 1929, Fox Studio, in this case William Fox, built a 1929 movie palace, and it literally takes up one solid block on Market Street in all directions. So all the way around it. One whole block. Biggest movie palace on the West Coast. And there was actually two others, like in Brooklyn and I think New Jersey, that were its sister theaters, built the same way. Those still exist.
Hmm.
But this particular one was built in 1929 by William Fox of the Fox Film Corporation. There were five of them built in the 20s. The others are Brooklyn, Atlanta, Detroit, and St. Louis. And I know that the Brooklyn and the Jersey one are still around. I don't know. No, Fox Atlanta is still there. I do know that. I don't know about Detroit or St. Louis. But they're massive. They look like... It's funny, when I go to palaces in England and Germany, it looks like a palace. It's just that big, and it's that ornate, gold ornate statues.
Fox Plaza here isn't even that
big. No, but the theater that used to be there is that entire block.
Right.
So the Fox Plaza, and then there's that smaller plaza below it with Starbucks, the post office.
Yeah.
That whole thing was one giant movie theater, the whole block. And it was massive, and it was there for a long, long time. It premiered, like I said, in June of 29. The first movie was Behind That Curtain, which was a Charlie Chan movie.
Huh.
The theater actually had to close in October 20th, 1932, so that's only like 5 years later. And it was closed until April 1st, 1933, due to financial difficulties. So, even 5 years in, this massive cathedral theater movie house that only showed one movie, and it had like 4,500 seats. So if you can't fill 4,500 seats, this is during the 20s, this is during the Depression.
When movies were fairly new and people were really going to them all the time.
But during the Depression and after this is actually, so built in 29, the Depression was still going on.
Yeah,
that's ending.
True.
But we're going into the 30s and, I guess unless you fill the place, you're not going to, I can't even imagine how much it would cost to keep a theater that large.
Right.
Clean
I can staffed. Imagine.
I mean, the cleaning staff alone.
It takes money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the staff, the ushers, the cashiers, the concession, everything. There's just a lot of people.
People were struggling. They probably just didn't have money to see movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So during that October 20, 1932 to October 1st, 1933, so that was about 6-7 months. They just had to close because they couldn't financially stay open.
Yeah.
So, attendance declined, revenue declined, and it's been an issue since the end of World War II, but became more pronounced by the late 50s with the invention of television.
Mm-hmm.
People could go home and watch movies, so why would you go to this massive movie palace to see one movie
mm-hmm.
when you could watch TV and flip the channel and see all three channels? But
that was probably a pretty big mindset when TV... was becoming popular.
Yep.
Yeah.
So with the expansion of television in the 50s, the question that the city and the county of San Francisco was buying the Fox Theater and its land, so they put it before a vote. Mm-hmm. They actually asked the registered voters of the city on November 7, 1961, is Proposition 1, requiring only a simple majority, and it was overwhelmingly defeated with a no vote of 59.2%. So on February 16, 63, that's it. Theater shut down. Everybody was fired. Everybody closed up.
Kind of sad.
It is sad. In fact, the night, there was a Farewell to Fox benefit concert featuring a lot of Hollywood actors and theater performers whose movies ran there, who did live shows there.
Yeah, because people love their movies.
Yep, Jane Russell, Tiny James, longtime Fox Theater, Everett Forbes.
Oh, man. Morse.
I actually saw a clip the other day when they actually had clips of the concert. And they show Hedda Hopper at the microphone talking about the theater and its history, how sad it was that it was being torn down. So it's kind of sad, but it's interesting when you watch the clips, because then you can see clips of, you know, the theater being demolished. There's pictures on the internet of these giant wrecking balls.
Hurts my heart to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I bet you anything, people voted because there were plenty of old theaters in San Francisco, and they probably, what's one more, right? But
exactly.
Now, I bet people wish they would have kept it.
Well, I mean, that's the problem, is it just takes so much money to keep it going. But
yeah.
Unless you have the money, it's real estate. Think of all the theaters that got chopped up into multiplexes.
That's true.
Some of them survived, some of them were eventually tore down.
But yeah.
Even here, there was, you know, the Coronado, there was a lot of theaters here in town that eventually got pretty much demolished or gutted.
Right.
Like the El Capitan and the Mission, which was the sister theater of the El Capitan in Hollywood.
Yes.
Same exact design and manufacturing. They kept the facade, gutted the theater, and turned it into a parking lot.
Right.
Which is really sad when you walk by, because you can see how great the theater was.
I know, yeah.
So anyway, this giant theater, they've turned it down, voted no, was demolished in July of 63. Now, on this same site, which they now call Fox Plaza, now you know where it gets its name. It's an homage to this beautiful theater that's been now demolished. So we'll call this street Fox Plaza. They built a high-rise building with offices and apartments. And like I said, there is one in Los Angeles, but this is a different Fox Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
The Wurlitzer organ that was salvaged from the theater was installed in the Frank J. Lannerman Estate in La Canada, Flint Ridge, California. And the large 4-manual 36-rank organ was bought by the Disney Company. And guess where that organ from the Fox Theater now is?
Where?
The El Capitan in Hollywood.
That's interesting.
So that's where their organ came from, is from our Fox Theater here in San Francisco.
I loved it when those old theaters had the organs to play. That was the
best. Castro Theater is like the last one that still has
one. That's so cool to listen to. Yeah.
So this giant Fox Plaza building, and I personally think it looks like a headstone. Like a giant headstone of where the theater used to be.
That's a good way to put it. I can't stand that place.
It is ugly, and it looms over Civic Center, and in the apartments above, you can see different curtains from different windows, has a war-torn look. It's very, like, cement. It's concrete.
It's very gloomy.
Yes, yes. Mid-1990s. It's a 29-story building, has a mixed-use. Residents live there, but there's been a lot of tragedy considering the actual building itself. And this is an actual tweet from somebody who knew more about the building itself. This was actually from November 6, 2013. Marcus Wilson, a reporter from the Associated Press from 2006 to 2012, concurred AP Bureau was there three years ago. Body's a regular feature then too. He replied, the ugliness of Fox Plaza stands on the site of what was the 4,651-seat Fox Theater, was once the largest movie theater west of Chicago. According to urban legend, Church of Satan founder Anton LaVey, who played the organ at the Fox on a regular basis, he was an organ player for them. Which makes sense with some of the articles I did on him and found. He was an organist in different theaters in California. During its final show on Saturday, February 17, 1963, he was the organist. 3 years before he declared Satanist the first year of the reign of Satan in 1966, as LaVey struck the last chord that ever echoed through the Ford Theater auditorium, he reportedly cursed whatever building would be replace his beloved cinema.
Wow.
A gold wrecking ball wrapped in tassels from the Fox's oversized stage curtain slammed into the theater's west wall 11 days later. The curse appeared to take effect before the new Fox Plaza building was even completed. A 5-ton crane collapsed and hurtled through the metal skeleton of the upper floors on July 20th, 1965. One man's legs were crushed under the crane's 5-ton mast.
Ouch.
Four others were injured. Now, LaVey proclaimed the reign of Satan as April 30, 1966, gave way to May 1st. Fox Plaza opened without incident a day later on May 2nd. Now, the suicides in the high-rise started the following year when 49-year-old William Detterer, shot himself in his girlfriend's 26th-floor apartment in March 1967.
Ouch.
The tragedies continued into the next decade when an epileptic man jumped 22 stories to his death on September 4, 1971. A 45-year-old cabbie shot himself in the face with a skeet gun in his apartment and crawled off his 14-story balcony on February 15, 1972. Now, other accidental deaths and suicides have been reported over ever since. Not all the tragedies connected to the Fox Plaza had been self-inflicted. In other words, other people have had a hand. One fire truck came as there was a small waste basket fire in the building. They jumped the curb on Marcus Street and Taylor on December 5, 1975, and killed three people at a crowded muni stop.
Ouch!
A sniper rained down bullets on the plaza in 1979, while decades of death falls from the plaza may confirm the rumor of LaVey's curse. The Fox was a troubled enterprise, even back when it was in its theater glory days, like we mentioned, when it had to close for a while. Less than a month after William Fox opened the Theater of Dreams in June 29, the movie studio magnate was severely injured in a car accident and killed his chauffeur. Fox was kept alive by a blood transfusion from J. Carroll Nash, a character actor who later played a murderous hunchback in House of Frankenstein. The theater hit hard times after the stock market crash of 29, closed for 6 months, and then reopened. The Fox was the scene of several holdups, a suicide, a deadly accident. Two ushers stepped into an empty elevator shaft. The cause of the building's history of suicides may have more to do with unfettered balcony access than the supernatural and death curses, but it's actually unclear if LaVey really played the organ during the Fox's farewell. I did find a book that said he did, but then I found another article online that said someone else was playing the organ that night. So I think it could be folklore that he was... It just sounds more dramatic saying, "And Tom was the last one to play the organ before he cursed."
It could just be folklore.
It could be. Maybe they had a series of people playing the organ that night.
They could
have,
like
a concert. So
if it was a long concert, he could have been one of them, but not all of them.
Yeah.
But when you're done talking about it, I'll tell you my feelings about Fox Plaza.
So, like I said, it's unclear whether he actually played the farewell. According to a 2000 Chronicle obituary, Everett Nourse was the organist for the Fox, where he delighted audiences until it closed in 63. But one can argue the construction of it obviously marks the beginning of a colder, violent crime. Now, here's another person in August of 2009. So we'll flash. I'm trying to give it chronological here.
Sure.
Someone said, "Oh dear, didn't hear about this one until today. Forgive the delay. A woman fell from an apartment balcony at Fox Plaza, affectionately known as the Crystal Tower. According to reports, the woman fell from a very high floor of the 29-story building. She crash-landed on Polk Street between Market and Hayes.
Ouch.
The identified woman was taken to the hospital with severe gash on the top of her head. No word yet why or how she fell from the balcony. Fox Plaza obviously sits on the former site of the theater. Now, in 2022, it gets better. San Francisco police named the possible sixth victim of the Doodler serial killer who targeted gay men. A man was beaten to death in 1975 and has been identified as the possible sixth victim of the largely forgotten serial killer who targeted gay white men in San Francisco between 74 and 76. The killer is known by police as the Doodler, so because he told the surviving victim he was studying to be a cartoonist, according to San Francisco police. Detectives allege that the killer drew his victims in, literally with sketches of them he'd draw on cocktail napkins. They believe he lured them into secluded areas for sexual hookups, slashed and battered their bodies, and bodies were discovered the following morning.
What a creep.
Yeah. At the time of the murders, the suspect killer was described as a black man between 19 and 25, with a medium complexion and smooth skin. He's between 5 feet 11 inches and 6 feet tall, kind of lanky. They said the killer is believed to be responsible for at least 5 murders, but they could have killed as many as 14 or 15 men. On Thursday, the anniversary of the first murder attributed to a cold case, investigators doubled down to reward. 6 men was added to the list. He was beaten to death with a rock and a tree branch. Andrews was found April 27, 1975, beneath some overhanging brush at Land's End Park, obviously near the Sutro Baths. Andrews, who lingered for 7 weeks before dying of his injuries, was first considered a potential doodler victim last year when reporters at the San Francisco Chronicle, with help from the cold case detectives, took a fresh look at the case. And the reason I mention this is because one of the first victims lived in the Fox Tower, and he went into the guy's apartment at Fox Tower with him.
But how was he able to lure him, show a napkin, I can draw you, and then he lures him into his apartment?
For sex.
Oh.
And then they might have gone somewhere else, and he killed him, but he went back to his apartment because the guy lived at Fox Tower.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, again, it all ties back to Fox Tower. Suicides, deaths, elevator deaths for the theater, the curse. So it has an interesting history, the place.
And, you know, it's in a very busy side of San Francisco.
Oh, absolutely.
Near a civic center where there's a lot of chaos and negative stuff around there.
Yeah, there's a lot of homeless and just violence. And
lots of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate Fox Plaza. And one of the reasons I hate Fox Plaza was because I used to have to go work and go to BART every single day. And sometimes, like back in the 80s, well, I don't know if you were here in San Francisco back in the 80s, but they had a coffee shop and they had like a store, a little store in the bottom where you can buy things, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had to, this was when BART took cash rather than a Clipper card.
Yeah.
When you would put cash in.
Yep.
And sometimes I had to go get change and I didn't know, and I had to get extra change. And I used to have to go inside one of the stores, and it was the early morning to get change.
Yeah.
And the clerks were so grouchy. I mean, they were...
Where did you go, though, to get the change? Do you remember?
It was Fox Plaza, but it was one of the stores. I don't remember which store it was.
See, now it's just Starbucks and the post office. Maybe it was other stores.
It was another store back then.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think the post office was there back then, but I'm not really sure. But they had a coffee shop, and they had a little store.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the clerks was always such a grouch, and every time I had to ask for change, and you know, I would buy something like gum or you know, buy us a little something,
yeah.
And then I would ask, you know, can you give me change and such, and they would be like, oh, you know, and I would be like, and I knew it was early in the morning before a lot of customers, they didn't have a lot of it, but I didn't do it all the time, so anyway, they were grumpy, and sometimes I would buy some coffee in the morning to take with me, and I would think, geez, what a bunch of grouchos in this place. Every time I go to the shopping center, people are grouchy.
Yeah, but back to the plaza.
That's what I meant. It was in Fox Plaza.
I did read that during COVID, and even recently, they had window panes just fall out onto the streets below.
Window panes?
Yeah, the window was so, it would rattle the windows, and they would literally fall out of the frames.
Well, doesn't that mean that they had to repair the building? Or,
yeah.
You know, they needed to do repairs?
Yeah, exactly. That was during COVID. And also, they said during COVID that the city was housing inmates that get out of prison. You know, they have that program where it's to rehabilitate yourself into life.
Yeah,
They would house them in the Fox Plaza.
That's interesting.
So there was like drug addicts that got out of drug rehab. There was former inmates. They said the place, one person said she lived on one of the floors, and she said there was a few people on the floor when she lived there. This wasn't, I don't know, I would say 2012. She said a woman on her floor died, but they didn't find her for like 5 or 6 days until
Ooh.
They could smell her.
Oh my gosh. So that means that she wasn't in contact with anybody. No. Yeah.
So all the tenants like, what is that awful smell? And then they found her body, but they said the smell just lingered for months and months, and they had to repaint. And so, well, interestingly enough, a company came in recently, and they called it the Crystal Towers now or something.
Uh-huh.
They flipped the place. They evicted as many as they could. They got rid of everybody that they could get out of there.
Uh-huh.
And they flipped it, and they call it the Crystal Tower now. You can go and see the rentals online. I went and looked at them. The apartments inside look nice, but I'm sorry, that place is so ugly on the outside. And they put these big blue lights at night, and they try to make it look nice.
I've seen rental signs for that building many times. When I was apartment hunting some years ago, I saw rental signs for them, and they were offering it was always a kind of expensive because they say in the middle of busy downtown San Francisco, but they were trying to...
the armpit of San Francisco.
Well, they didn't say that, of course not, but they were trying to make it look attractive, and they were trying to offer a good price for it. I mean, it was still expensive, but it was a better price.
Do you remember what it was priced at?
I don't remember the price, but
now they price it as $1,800. To start for a studio.
I think it was $1,200 at the time.
And
yeah,
up to $2,300 for a one bedroom. And I think it's even more than that for a two bedroom.
And
now,
they were saying shops and downtown nearby. They were making it sound like it's, you know.
And it's not. There's no shops down there.
Well, of course not. But they mentioned shops nearby. You know?
I would be afraid. Every time I left that, if I lived there, I'd be afraid. I'd have to look both directions. Mm-hmm. And be like, I'm going to go wherever I need to go because I don't want to be downtown, especially at night. I'd be afraid to, like, going home and...
I would have been weirded out. But they also mentioned close to transportation, which it is. It's close to BART.
So you get hit by a falling window or
maybe
a fire truck will, like, run into you. I don't know.
So it's, you know, but it's... I always wondered why they had such a hard time renting that place. But then I realized, okay, if they went through the grouchy things like I did, every time I walked by or every time I went there, it was always weird energy, then I can see why.
Well, that's what I was going to say is, with all the suicides and all that stuff, how much dark energy just lingers in that building?
Right.
You know, and I wouldn't say it's from the movie theater days, although the fact that people died in elevator shafts and you never know.
It's also because of the area... The area, you know, kind of has a weird vibe to it anyway. Civic Center always did.
It's funny, when I took pictures of it recently, I walked down the block, and you could feel definitely it has a different vibe in that block than it does anywhere else.
It really does. Before you did this subject, I used to think it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
I used to walk by and I would think, ew, I don't like the energy here, but I used to think, it's just me. I don't have good memories of Fox. Now I realize it's not just me.
No, there's something going on there. I once thought, if it's cheap enough, I could live there. And I thought, God, it's so ugly. When you look at it, you're like, this is just an ugly-ass building. It looks like a tombstone. Like I said, it's a nice headstone for the former Fox Theater.
But it kind of is, yeah. But, you know,
I
mean,
imagine it's haunted. It's all those deaths and all that. Suicides and anguish and worry and inmates getting out of prison and being helpless. Having no life, having to start over.
That's enough to make it funky.
Exactly. So
to make the energy funky.
I would love to know someone who lives there.
I was just about to say that.
To see if there's any paranormal stories in the building. Because there's always going to be
some. And if you live there and you enjoy it and you have a good experience, then I'm glad for you because we actually need people there who have good experience.
Yeah, but if
we actually need that. We need more positive
stories
around there.
Contact us and we'll put you on the show.
Yeah, we'll put you on the show. That would be great.
Yeah, I'd be curious though, because there's got to be some. There has to be.
Oh, I'm sure there's people who, I mean, there's probably people who live there who, you know, don't know the history and they don't feel anything and they just enjoy their apartment.
Yep.
And that's how it should be.
But it's been flipped. If you go online, you can see the nice, clean insides and compared to the nice, ugly outside.
I know what they need.
What?
They need a shaman or somebody to come and do a blessing on the place and dispel any negative.
Maybe Tangina from Poltergeist can come in and do her thing.
No, I mean, I'm talking about a real shaman or even a Native American shaman to come in and bless the place.
Mm-hmm.
and dispel all the negative stuff, but they're not going to do that. But nope. That would be a great idea.
Yeah, it's too late now. They've already flipped it and they're renting it.
Well, all right.
All right, folks. If you don't want to live in the Fox Plaza, maybe we'll find a place for you to live next week on Ecto Portal. So until then, we'll say goodbye.
Bye.
Royalty-free, copyright-free music by Kevin MacLeod and Ross Bugden.
Be sure to visit us at www.ectoportal.com. Check out our archives on YouTube and head on over for new episodes to ectoportal.podbean.com.